Committee, just to give you a heads up on sort of where we're going, and we shouldn't have to be here very long, is what I would like to do is on 3073, is I'd like to send that to Ways and Means. And then the other bill, 676, I think for today, I'd like to just do a public hearing on that bill and then and talk about some of the issues. And I'm hoping that Randy Hildebrand from Senator Clarno's office is going to be here to talk about the issues around the state motor pool. So with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3073. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3073 to the Committee on Ways and Means with no recommendation.
With no recommendation. Okay. Great. The motion is by Representative Kitts to move House Bill 3073 without recommendation to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brzezanski.
I'm sorry. The Chair may have already said why this is happening as compared to us acting on it.
They basically have asked for it down in Ways and Means. The General Government Subcommittee Chair has asked for the bill down there. I think that there is a potential for a fiscal, and as if I think the estimate that we originally received on this was fairly high, and I think Patrick
almost got a promotion there.
You did, but
thanks, Mr. Chair. If my notes are correct, Representative Butler, when he came to speak about this bill on the 15th, indicated that they had estimated the fiscal would be about $150,000 for the biennium. And I think that's why he was suggesting it should go to Ways.
Go ahead. Yes, and that would be appropriate because anything over with a fiscal over $50,000 we're supposed to send there anyway. Representative Kitts?
My question was, where does the fiscal come from to the tune of $150,000 for simply requiring the state to? Is there a more detailed description that I'm not seeing of where that dollar amount would derive from?
That's a very good question to which I don't have an answer. And Cindy, I don't know if you'd like to take a stab at that one or not. feel free to bring your coffee with you.
Thank you. You
know? Oh, that's so hateful.
But I know that there was a concern about that, and that's why. And I agreed to just basically, if the votes were on the committee, to go and send it down.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Cindy Becker, Assistant Director of Department of Administrative Services. The $150,000 comes really from programming costs. We don't have any system right now that can produce the type of information that is called for. We have the information. We just don't have any program that would automatically pull that. So because it's not how we don't pull things by including the job description. And we can do lots of runs around individual employees, what their salary is, what their level is, but this bill also requires some information about their job description for each individual. It also requires us to provide information about personal service contractors, and that is kept, as I said, at the public hearing at the agency level. We do not have that centralized, so it would require some work to be able to pull that. So the information is there. It's just providing it in the format required by this bill that would cost money.
Representative Kitts?
If we were to amend the bill to delete the contracting portion and just add salaries, job title, job description, would that reduce the fiscal substantially? I would assume you'd have a job description and salaries readily available.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kitts, we have it. Job descriptions available. They're not automated, if you will, in other words, into a single database. So the fact that the job description is created on a computer, we don't keep that information. We have all the other information in a database. But so if you took the job description piece out, that would cut the fiscal to just about nothing. But it's by putting the job description information in that we'll have to create that and put that in. And definitely it would reduce it by not including the personal service contractors.
Okay. And so I just want to know why the fiscal is so high. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. There aren't any other questions for Cindy. Okay. The motion before us then is to send House Bill 3073 to the Committee on Ways and Means with no recommendation. Representative.
I'm not going to be able to support the bill based on our conversations that we had and testimony, I should say, on the bill. I don't see the benefit versus the cost as to having what we what I understand to be volumes of papers just listing four or five categories without any type of detail. And I don't see anything in here as to where there's going to be any type of audit provided by any agency or by the legislature to actually find out exactly what that information would, what it means. So I'll be respectfully voting no.
Okay. So noted. Any other comments? Gina, call the roll, please.
No.
Representative
Kick?
Aye.
Representative
Mabry?
Aye.
Representative
Nelson?
Aye.
No. Excused. Aye. House Bill 3073 is moved to the Committee on Ways and Means with no recommendation. Thank you very much. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3073. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 676. We must have only one person on the list at this point, since there's only one other person besides Cindy in the room. You must be Rod Lohop.
I am.
Please, come on up.
Well, no, nobody would know that. Can't find that information anywhere.
Nor do we have a job description.
Yeah. What do you do?
Would you mind going ahead and telling us how much you cost us? No, I'm just kidding.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rod Lohop. I'm the fleet manager for the Department of Administrative Services, Procurement, Fleet, and Surplus Services. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 676. This bill is a result of some recommendations coming out of an interim Senate task force on state-owned vehicle efficiency.
Thank you.
These recommendations are based on a biennial fleet review that was conducted for the 9901 biennium by Maximus Incorporated, a national government consulting agency. This bill deals with utilization of vehicles and mileage replacement criteria. It modifies ORS 283, 312, 313, and 314. This bill would hold agencies responsible for justifying a vehicle when it does not meet mileage criteria. It would be monitored annually by Department of Administrative Services. It expands the vehicles covered from sedans and station wagons to all light-duty vehicles under 8,500 GVW. It modifies utilization criteria and replacement criteria to include mileage and age of the vehicle. That ends my testimony, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Okay. Representative Nelson?
Thank you. Mr. Lohoff, who monitors the use, the appropriate use of the vehicle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that is done at the agency level. There is a, when we have a citizen complaint about suspicious use of a vehicle, risk management actually investigates that, contacts the agency responsible for the vehicle and responds accordingly.
And follow-up?
Follow-up.
And risk management is where?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, risk management is part of the Administrative Services, Department of Administrative Services.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Lohoff? One of the things that that we had talked about in my office, and I just am, would like to get on the record, and that is with regards to the state vehicles and the mileage at turn-in, because I know that there's been some discussion about whether to hold the vehicle until it's got 100,000 miles or is 7 years old, which in some respects some would argue sort of drives the value out of the vehicle versus similar to what the private sector does, the auto rental agencies and that sort of thing, where they keep a vehicle no more than generally about 24 months, and they run them to about somewhere around 12 to 15,000 miles, and then they have a program with the manufacturer where they then go to an auction for dealers to pick up as what they call program cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if that discussion has sort of taken place, and what that has shown. Because what I'm wondering is if it wouldn't be possible with the types of pricing that we're able to get on vehicles because of the volume, if we couldn't in essence end up auctioning them or selling them off for potentially the same amount of money or more money than what our actual cost of the vehicle was, thereby lowering our cost of ownership.
Mr. Chair, that was a recommendation of the very first biennial fleet review conducted by Five Star International. He recommended that we model our replacement criteria after the industry standard of 12,000 miles, 12,000 to 15,000 miles. We did kind of an informal internal study ourselves, and we found that for sedans and station wagons, we could theoretically sell a vehicle that meets that criteria for about the same amount of money that we would pay for it, because we currently get pretty good incentives from the big three. However, in talking to representatives from the manufacturers, were we to change our criteria to turn them over like that, our incentives would probably go away. One of the reasons that we do get that incentive is they anticipate us holding them for 5 to 10 years. And if we were to turn them more frequently, then we would interfere with their marketing strategies, and because a lot of the private rental companies are owned by the manufacturers, and they don't want that additional competition. So on paper it would pencil out, but in reality it probably wouldn't, because our pricing would probably change.
Okay. And that's what I wanted to find out is how much do we, and has there been an assessment as to how much do we think the pricing would change in that kind of a program?
No, Mr. Chair, I think that it would change significantly. We get a pretty healthy reduction in costs from the manufacturer, and right now the dealer doesn't make very much money on it, although they do certainly cover their costs and make some volume dollars. But I would suspect that the incentive might go away as much as half or more. We saw some recent incentive reduction when the retail market was very strong. They didn't need the fleet business, and our incentives from the manufacturer dropped by 50%.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. So then if the are they afraid of flooding the market with program-type cars? Is that sort of their concern, do you think?
Mr. Chair, I think that's correct.
Okay. Okay. Representative Kitts, you had a question?
You indicated earlier the incentives from the big three.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, that's correct.
Would the incentives not be greater if we were to consolidate down to maybe one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, we've also looked into that, and I personally think that it would benefit us to establish 5-year contracts with manufacturers. When we broached that subject with the dealers, we about had a rebellion on our hands. There's some pluses and minuses. Yes, you'd get a long-term contract, but right now we issue contracts to all three manufacturers in some categories, some more than others, depending on what kind of retail sales they're having, really is what drives a lot of that. But none of them wanted to be cut out of a major share of that volume, even though the state of Oregon is not a significant player nationally as far as vehicle sales, that they don't want to lose what they currently have.
Follow up. I understand that. I quite frankly don't disagree with them, but I would think that the idea of incentives that you are talking about that would go away as a result of us trying to turn in cars more frequently rather than less. I would think that would be able to be worked into some form of a deal. You know, if you went to Ford, let's say, and said, we're going to give you the, you know, and put it up for bid, obviously, and let the three battle it out and come to you with their best offer instead of us, you know, put us in the driver's seat, so to speak.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, there is some complications to it because of a lack of ongoing models of vehicles. For instance, Taurus has been a frequent award winner. It wasn't this year, it was previous year. The Chevrolet Impala was this year, but Taurus was last year. And Taurus is going away in 2005, so the manufacturer doesn't really want to commit to a vehicle 5 years down the road that they may not even be making right now. and they don't know the cost of the replacement, whether it's going to go up or down. I know when I think anybody that watches cars is familiar with the Taurus when it changed to its current body style from about 1995 was the last year, the old body style, 96 was the model change. The price of that vehicle went through the roof. We purchased 1995s and 94 Tauruses. They were on contract, but the 96 one, they didn't even make it to the page. They were that. So I think that they're a little bit afraid of that fluctuation in costs.
Okay. Any further questions?
Okay. There's been some talk about the use of private vehicles, particularly in the outlying areas, but even to a certain degree, the in the Salem, Portland, Eugene areas, being able to utilize, instead of having a state motor, maintaining a state motor pool, having Enterprise or Thrifty or whomever have the contract to provide vehicles. So if, for example, if you needed a car to go to Portland, you would just call up the local dealer or Enterprise person, and they would bring a car out, drop it off, and away you'd go, and the paperwork would all be done and processed and so on. Any thoughts about that from a standpoint of eliminating the motor pool in terms of light duty and passenger vehicles and going to the private sector?
Mr. Chair, that was one of the reasons, one of the focuses of the last fleet review that Maximus did. We asked him to specifically take a look at the issue of privatization. He determined that for us to completely privatize the state fleet did not pencil out. He did recommend that we go, that we reduce the number of vehicles in our day trip fleet, which is the vehicles that we rent on a daily or weekly rental to agency personnel that are going to different meetings, by 30%, and supplement that with a contract with a private vendor. We have awarded a contract to Enterprise, and we are now in the process of rolling that out, that we would fulfill the high points of our peak demands with private rentals.
Okay. Representative Nelson, did you have a question?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. What's the method of determining the need for vehicles? Who makes those ultimate final decisions of who gets state-owned vehicles?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the agency sends us a written request for a vehicle that they determine the need. They make the final decision on the type of vehicle that they need, if they need a vehicle at all, what it's going to be used for. We try our best to fill the need. We don't always give them what they want. For instance, if they want a large sedan, we don't have that many, and we usually give them smaller sedans, or we talk to them. But for a specific type of a vehicle, they ask for that type of vehicle, and we just do our best to meet that need.
And a fun.
Go ahead.
How many vehicles are we talking about that are general purpose vehicles? I think that's the category.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, we're talking about light duty fleet. In the state, there's about 8,000 light duty vehicles. In the DAS fleet, there's about 4,000. That's a moving target, but.
So now I have another question.
Go ahead.
The 8,000, I don't understand the difference between the 8 and the 4. 4 you take care of, and the other 4 somebody else takes care of?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that's correct. DAS fleet is one of several fleets. There are 38 agencies that own and operate at least one vehicle. Department of, for instance, higher ed has their own fleet. State police has their own fleet. ODOT has their own fleet. Agriculture has their own fleet. Forestry has their own fleet. And there are several smaller agencies that have some number of vehicles, but those are the bigger players.
Which leads to another one you would know. Based on Representative Krummel's question, well, then, when we're replacing them, do you consider the entire fleet or only those which DAS takes care of? I mean, does this ever come together in one huge package?
Mr. Chair?
Which gives you more power in negotiating?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, when we issue contracts, therefore statewide contracts that all fleets participate in. So that's why we get the price. If that's what you're referring to, is the pricing is driven by all state fleets. What each state fleet buys is their own individual decision, but we have a committee that kind of discusses the different criteria that we want for different categories, and then we put that, incorporate that criteria into a bid. And quite truthfully, the real driver for our bids is local cities and counties. In the state, there's about 37,000 licensed rolling stock. Of that, the state owns about 12,000. All the rest of them are cities and counties. So we're only a third of the E-plated vehicles that you see running around. So the cities and counties that participate in state bids actually give us enough volume to drive better pricing.
Okay. I think, are there any other questions for Mr. Lohan? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't have anyone else signed up, and Randy has not come in. Lisa, did you want to weigh in on this? Okay, that's fine. I think, members, what I'm going to do is, rather than moving the bill today, I'm going to hold off because there's some other issues around this that are being discussed that we may want to put into this. And so probably sometime next week is when we would bring this back. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on 76. And since we don't have anything else, we will be adjourned. Thank you.